Speaking of reliability, friends talking about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career.
Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Carl Carlson.
And this is Fred Schenkelberg. And for new listeners, and this is, we're, I think, on the first day of the RAMS conference, actually, Carl, when this episode should be aired, if all the stars align and all that good stuff. The RAMS conference, I should mention as a quick aside, is a one that Carl and I actually, if this comes out on the day I think it's coming out, we're going to be doing a tutorial later today, Carl. Did you know that?
That's amazing, Fred. I'm glad you reminded me.
Yeah. No, I'm quite sure you've got your flights booked and you're all ready to go.
Yep.
How many years have you been going to RAMS?
1994 was the first year where I presented. I had been to some before that, but that's the one that I remember participating on a panel, and I've been going pretty steadily since then.
Okay. Well, I mean, this might turn into an interview at this point, but why? Why do you go so often?
I find the RAMS is just a very good forum because it has is represented by these different professional societies. So you've got, you know, IEEE, you've got SAE, you have ASQ. And that brings a certain amount of background and focus, and the camaraderie is really nice. Nice networking, and the presentations are reasonably good. And so I just found it a good once a year forum to attend. I learn a lot. I actually attend the sessions when I show up. Even year after year, I've been going to them. Mm-hmm. I still attend a lot of the sessions.
Yeah, I do the same. The last couple of years, I've been recording Speaking of Reliability episodes. So I'm not bringing my recording equipment this year. I haven't put it away into the bags. I probably will get back into the sessions again and do that. But it's a way that we teach each other. Right. It's a lot of reliability minded folks go to the conference and we share best practices and breakthroughs. And there's a bunch of academics talking about the esoteric stuff they're doing, some of which is useful, not always. But the ones I enjoy are the ones where it's another person in, and it could be any industry, talking about how they did something, how they did an FMEA, made it useful, how they did an accelerated test and actually solved all the various nuances of actually getting good results and those kind of things. Yeah, I'm with you that it's one of the ways that we teach each other in our industry. And so it's professional development is probably the right bucket for why we go to that.
Yeah, it is. Speaking of teaching, have an idea for our recording for our discussion today, and it might even go over into another one.
Okay.
Having to do with the subject of teaching. When I started out in reliability, I really didn't anticipate that I would be doing any teaching.
You're an engineer. I'm supposed to go do formulas and write reports
exactly.
And stuff.
Yeah. Exactly. What is this? Somebody else does the teaching. But I will say this: most everyone in their career, we have a lot of listeners, and I'd be very interested in people's experience and feedback on this. But most everybody in their career in reliability, at some point, will be asked or found yourself in a teaching environment, mm-hmm. Because a lot of what we do is transfer of knowledge. We can't just keep the knowledge amongst ourselves. We have to convey it and transfer it to other engineers as part of teams and that type of thing. And it's just an interesting subject is how do you go about teaching? What does it mean? And what is it? What are the methods that are used and that type of thing?
Yeah, well, there's a whole slew of terms and techniques and there's whole industries around, you know, doing professional education and all that stuff. And, you know, I'm thinking of RAMS as they send out a paper or guidance to presenters saying, all right, here's how to convey your information effectively. You know, use large fonts. Don't crowd up your slides, don't read your slides, things like that. Some of the basics of just making a presentation, and that's a form of teaching that we look for at RAMS. But it takes so many other forms, and I'm right there with you, Carl. Luckily I started my professional career in an organization that we did a lot of teaching, to each other all the time. It was just part of the culture. And so they hired a new engineer that was a PhD polymer scientist. He knew great amounts about polymers and polymer engineering, plastics essentially. And so one of the first things that we asked him to do was teach a class. What's the difference between a polyamide and a poly whatever, and why are they different? And how does the structure and its assembly and everything else do that? If we wanted to learn about design of experiments, usually it rotated around the group. All right, Fred, you need to teach DOE next month, so go figure it out. we were teaching each other all the time, and it translated into when we worked with a mechanical engineer, an extruder operator, or with anybody in the organization, it was common to say, all right, these are the terms I'm using. Here's the approach I'm taking. Here's why I'm doing what I'm doing. And it wasn't like we had a certificate at the end of the day that we gave anybody, but we did a lot of training in all kinds of forms. And that was, I think, unusual in my experience since.
My first experience was on my first job after college was at Litton Industries in aerospace, and I did a 4 or 5 lunch and learns with people on different topics where they would just bring their brown bag lunch and I would talk over a few topics, and it went okay but not real great, and I didn't really do any teaching for years after that. Mm-hmm. Thinking to the General Motors experience, I mostly went about reliability engineering and management, and we brought in other people to do teaching. Like mm-hmm. I remember bringing in Debra Hija, who I really appreciate, did some teaching at GM, and mm-hmm. and Patrick O'Connor and Dr. Michael Pecht came in every once in a while. And so we brought people in from the outside. And then there were some teachers internally. GM had its own cadre of teachers, and you'd bring them in on different subjects. And it was only later in my career that I started feeling it was okay for me to bring my own experience into that. And I think the point I was making is the environment that we had at GM, teaching was more of a formal thing. Mm-hmm. And I've learned that oftentimes less formality can improve the teaching environment because sometimes people walk into it, the students walk into a course and it isn't as open. It isn't much of a dialogue as it should be. So one of my lessons about teaching is to have lots of dialogue between the instructor and the students. Unless you're in China, yes.
Yeah, unless you're in China, because it's really hard to get the dialogue going. Unless you're completely, if you're in a classroom setting, that doesn't happen. It varies by culture. If a culture is such that they have tons of mandatory training, for safety classes and for ESD protection and for workplace harassment classes. And it just goes on. And every week you're spending 3-4 hours in a required class. The last thing anybody wants to do is go to another class because it's just another thing that they got to pass the test at the end and get past it.
They have to endure it.
And that's not what we do as reliability engineers. A lot of what we do is based on influence, right? We want them to change this material so that it has more robust to the stresses it's going to see, for example. And part of that discussion is, well, what's the failure mechanism? Why is that a risk? What's the techniques used to evaluate that? How do we know that? Where did that come from? What are the options? In that discussion and dialogue ends up being I found it over and over again is when I start talking about, well, that UV degrades this material. What? How does it do that? And now I'm doing a material science class. Right?
Right. You shift gears. Yes.
Yeah. And it might be 2-3 sentences for some people. Okay, got it. Move on. And others, mm-hmm. it might be an ongoing discussion over a period of time as they gain the information and understand it and wrestle with it in their context, whether it's mechanical engineering or whatever. And likewise, I'm always asking, you know, especially some of the more high zoots materials and electronics that we're dealing with these days is, well, how does that work? Where are the limits? How do we evaluate, mm-hmm. you know, what do you expect it to fail? Now I'm coaching essentially how we, you and I and our listeners look at reliability of how to view it through that portal. But I'm also very interested in what they know about how it responds or behaves or the interactions and constraints and so on, so that I learn something about that science, that materials and so on. So I think it goes both ways. And I think it's part of the approach.
It does go both ways.
You know,
I agree. I believe that any subject like reliability is a lifelong learning process. It's not something you attain. It's something you keep learning. But let me just share a couple of thoughts on that I've been mulling over. I think to be a good teacher requires understanding how people learn. Mm-hmm. People do not learn well by just being told. It just does not work.
I have visions of my mom going, you know, because I told you. So,
yes, exactly.
Clean your room. Exactly. Why? Because I told you.
Because I told you. So telling can be one part of it, but it's a small part. You tell someone the principle. Then they need to think about it and try to put it into their own words. This is the ideal environment. Mm-hmm. If you're one-on-one, it's very easy. But when you have 20 students in a room, it's not as easy.
But or a couple of hundred, like we expect in our tutorial later today.
Yeah, exactly. And just as a sidebar to that, I limit my teaching in a teaching environment, not a tutorial, mm-hmm. To about 20.
Right.
Because I have a need or a desire to have interaction with students at a certain level that I cannot achieve with a larger class.
That's right.
So I've been limiting the classes to about 20 for that reason, to optimize the amount of dialogue. Mm-hmm. But if a student can hear the principle, see it visually, put it into their own words, which is an auditory, get some exercises, which is more of an interaction. You're really, what this is the subject of learning styles, where there's the visual, the verbal, the physical, the social. There's even the solitary learning style. All mm-hmm. of these come together and different people have different emphases or focuses for their what works best for them.
Right.
But I've found that interaction is essential. And let me just share one story, and then I'll get off the soapbox here. I had a class a while back in a foreign country, where culturally, people did not ask questions. Right. In other words, they more listened.
Right.
And after it was a 2-day class, and after the first day, I go, oh, this is not going to work. I'm telling them, but I'm not hearing or seeing whether they understand it.
Right.
So the next morning I said, okay, for the next hour or as long as it takes, I want to get one question from each student. There were a little over 20 people in the room. Mm-hmm. One question from each of you. So I want you to be thinking right now about what your question is going to be, and then I'm going to go around the room. Mm-hmm. And we did that, and it just opened up a terrific dialogue. Because they thought about the question, and then it was what was most important to them, and it opened up the dialogue, and the class went really well after that.
Yeah, but you also set the expectation. This is what we're going to do. This is it's not. I know that your style is more often of, well, here's some material, and then what do you think, or what's your mm-hmm. take on this, or because you're looking for that that getting them to say it, that phrase to me is a technique to put it into their world, right? It's if we're talking to an electrical engineer, mechanical engineer, and we're talking about margins, for example, or test to failure, it means it's different sets of failure mechanisms. It's different actual stresses that we apply to manifest the different kinds of failures. And having them put it into their own words, connected to where they see the risks, helps them to internalize it, to wire it up in their memory so that it becomes part of what they think about, not just something they've heard. So there's a lot of power to that discussion and dialogue and so on, so that people take away things. And yeah, one of the techniques I've set up and used over the years, and it's been successful in many circumstances, even for training that I attend, is at the start of the courses or of the more formal type courses that I do, it would be, well, we're going to cover a lot of material, and I don't expect you to immediately apply the 27 different major things in here that you could apply. Pick three, pick one, write it down, and let's talk again in 2 weeks. And how'd it go? Did it work? Did you get the results you were expecting? Did it not work? And let's explore why that happened and what didn't work out for you, or what didn't happen. And more often, and you use a quick example, is that I was teaching a short class on basically using a Weibull CDF, you know, plotting the data and interpreting it. And so their homework essentially was, for a number of the students, was they had access to some data that made sense to take a look at it, and they went off and did it. And what happened is the three students that took on that challenge came back and said in 2 weeks and said, well, I did the exercise, I got the plot, and I'm not exactly sure how to interpret it. All right, well, let's look at it. And here's how I think about it, right? And then in 2 weeks, they had more data coming in. All right, now you do it. And it was reinforcing the lessons of that class, but it was setting that expectation, right? Like you did, is saying, hey, let's have a question, and everybody's going to ask a question. And so I'll be coming around to you here. It was, go try it, go do it. And good, bad, or you struggle with it, that's all good. Let's then check in and make sure that you are more likely to be successful as you move forward. And yeah, it's, you know, we go to classes, we go to training, we do all this other stuff. And unless you actually use it, unless somebody actually internalizes it, it's really kind of wasted energy.
I agree totally, Fred. Yeah, yeah. I think a teacher needs to, this is another thing that I've been mulling over, is a good teacher needs to manage the personality styles of the students as regards to extroversion and introversion.
Especially when you got one sitting next to the other one.
Yeah, exactly. So if you say, does anybody have any questions? Mm-hmm. The extrovert will raise his hand, the introvert will not.
Mm-hmm. And now you're being overly simplifying the whole picture, yes. But yeah, I get the idea.
Yeah, there's a continuum, and some people are in the middle and some people are way out there. And I've, as you've heard me say before, and those that have heard our podcast know this, the extrovert is not better than the introvert. There's no correlation between extroversion and introversion and capability. Mm-hmm. It's just the extrovert processes information by talking, and the introvert processes information by thinking. And that's the tendency. And like you say, that it's not black or white like that.
Right.
But as an instructor, if all you do is say, does anybody have any questions? Oftentimes people will not ask, even though they do have a question.
That's right.
And so you have to find other ways. And one of the things I do when I start any class, whether it's a few hours or a day or multi-days, is I start with a little chart of where everybody's sitting and what their names are. And I go around the room and I get to know their background a little bit, how experienced they are. And then as the class develops, I call on them for answers to questions.
You remind me of Mrs. Fink in sixth grade. That's a good thing, Carl. That's a good thing.
Okay. I hope that was a good person in your...
Yeah. It was a good thing. Yeah. And, you know, one technique, I approach it differently. And in more of a class setting, right? When it's one-on-one or a very small group or an ongoing meeting, then it's... You get to know the personalities and get to know people, and you can draw them out as needed. You have to pay attention to that, though. If you're only talking to the people that are talking to you, then you're missing half the talent in the room oftentimes. Right. So what I tend to do, especially if it's we're problem solving or it's, you know, we've done the work to figure out, well, what's the course about and so on. So let's say it's Weibull analysis, for example, data analysis. And part of the intro in getting started is going around the room and a little bit about where the people are from. But more importantly, what I'm looking for is what are your expected takeaways for this course or this class? At the end of this thing, what do you need to know? You came into this class either as a prisoner, like somebody told you you had to go.
Yeah.
Well, let's make it useful. What could... out of this topic area, what would be useful for you to take away? Other people are there because they want to learn something and they have something in mind or a topic or an area or a feature or something they want to take away. Let's get those out and put them on the board. And what it does for me is it says, oh, I need to spend more time on this part and less on that, or alter the content so I can address the issues that each person's bringing up. Because my objective in a class is that they get something of value to them, and I need to know where they're at, right? I need to know, are they experienced with this and they're doing a very fine nuance application, or they don't know any of the terms and don't know what I'm talking about? As you know, if there's five people, you probably got five different starting points.
Well, that's a good point. You never get a class where everybody's at the same level. And I do the same thing you do. I as part of going around the room, I get a sense for where are they, what their goals are, what their background is, how experienced they are. And so that each student, the goal for each student is to raise that level of knowledge. Mm-hmm. If they're experienced, then raise the knowledge even beyond their experience. If they're new, that's a lot easier.
Yeah. You know, I feel like we're just scratching the surface here
on this whole topic. Yes,
indeed. Yeah. I think the point is that to be a good teacher, you got to pay attention to it. And I think we need to come back and talk about how to recognize when you should turn on the teacher mode and some of the techniques in that.
I think that's a good follow-up, and we could also get into the difference between coaching and teaching.
Ah, yeah. See, I put those together.
Okay.
Yeah. And I agree with you. We probably should break that up a little bit. All right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, hey, you know, if you as a listener are teaching or coaching or learning or trying to absorb some knowledge and so on, this education piece is just big part and parcel to what Carl and I often advocate is what we do and what we should be doing is both teaching and learning. And some even say that the best way to learn something is to teach it. So these all get wrapped in and around, and it's not unique to reliability engineering, yet we often do get called into these roles. So we would love to hear from you as to, you know, what topic in here that you'd like to learn more about, what things you're struggling with, what questions you have. Just as Carl and I just talked about, is you as listeners are probably coming to this topic in a wide range of sets of backgrounds and experiences and needs. And the best way for us to help you is to know that and know where you're at. So head over to ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR. And it's a great place to leave. There's a form there and you can find our contact info and all that good stuff. And leave us some information, leave us a question or a comment. We'd love to hear from you. So you ready for the deluge? Carl, hopefully we get a few questions there.
All set for it. Yep, right. Very much so.
All right, great. Well, thanks so much, Carl, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks, Fred.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.